the whole class, everyone that was participating, we shared one room of a hotel in Monterey. We all slept in sleeping bags on the floor. And that is where I met my wife.
Off-Gassing, a scuba podcast with host Nick Hogel. Northern California has always held a place in my heart. I was born there, I have family there, I have roots there. Sadly, I have never explored the aquatic environment in the area, so I was excited to have a conversation with longtime native Ted Judah. Inspired by his father to become a diver, he eventually found his way to the underwater world. As it happens, Ted stepped away to raise a family. After an extended leave, Ted and his wife decided to rekindle the passion for the sport that brought them together. Early days of homemade wetsuits, local diving, volunteering at the California Academy of Sciences, surfing, but most of all, a message to get the dives in with the ones you love. Please enjoy. Ted, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am doing very well. Just kind of halfway through the morning. I don't know exactly what. Well, actually, I'll probably be doing some editing for the rest of the day, but usually there's something else thrown into the mix. But how is the so you're in California, correct?
Yeah, I'm in Northern California, north of San Francisco.
Awesome. How's the weather there right now?
Right now, we have kind of a break between the storms, but there's another one coming. We've had some pretty big surf lately, pretty good flooding, a lot of rainfall, and it looks like we might get more.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I am excited to have you on the podcast. I'm actually very excited, too, to hear more about the diving in your area, because for some of the listeners that might know out there, I am actually originally from the Bay Area of California, but I've never done any diving in that area. And you're a little bit more north, but you know, I know the waters are generally cold and the weather is beautiful. But my first question I wanted to ask you is, tell me about that first breath underwater. What led you to the moment, the how, the why? Was it, I absolutely love this, or was it, I am never doing this again? Tell me all about it.
I'm glad you ask people this question. I always think about this whenever I hear you ask people. So my first breath underwater was in my uncle's jacuzzi. So I discovered as a young boy being in his jacuzzi that the air jets, if I could put my head under there, I could sip the air out of the jacuzzi jet. And I would stay under for minutes at a time, just breathing underwater, you know, to my parents' horror, you know, where is Teddy? He's been in the jacuzzi for 8 minutes, you know, underwater. So it wasn't that I was just a dumb kid. I think I just wanted to be like my dad. My dad was an avid scuba diver. He was kind of the sea hunt era and was an avid hunter as well as a naturalist, but Northern California diver would dive for abalone. He would shoot halibut. Our freezer was always full of seafood. I hated seafood as a kid, you know. But he was also a search and rescue diver for Napa County here in Northern California. Oh. For the Sheriff's Department. And that was kind of a big deal. But I didn't really know a lot about what he did when I was young. I learned about it much later. But much later, I got certified at age 26. My dad was always trying to get me to get certified. You know, I think he wanted to be a buddy with me, you know, and have me go diving. And I was kind of resisting. I actually got into surfing when I was a teenager. And when my dad wanted me to, you know, go abalone diving, I was like, oh no, I'm going to go surfing, you know, and I don't have many regrets in life, but one is I wished I had dived with my dad because it never happened. I never actually was certified when he was well enough to do it. And when he passed away, I didn't get that opportunity. So if there's one piece of advice I can give people, there's someone you want to dive with, grab them and go do it, you know, because you don't get that second chance. But he, like I said, he was a naturalist. He would early photographer. He had a big housing, you know, back in the 70s. And we'd do slideshows, you know, once a month when he would get his film developed and all the things he saw underwater. He would do trips down to Catalina and get lobster and come back with photos. And it was always very, I was always very proud of him. I would brag about him as a kid. My dad's a diver, you know, kind of thing. But when I was young, my dad made me a wetsuit, and that's kind of what you did back in the day.
Oh.
He went to a guy that measured me, you know, 100 different ways, made a pattern out of paper, gave my dad the paper pattern. He bought a roll of neoprene, rolled it out on the living room floor. We traced out all the pieces and cut them, glued all the joints together. They were all labeled, you know, A to A, B to B, you know, and folded this thing into a wetsuit for me. It was a two-piece Farmer John with a beaver tail. And I was 9 years old when I caught my first abalone. So I did dive with my dad, just not scuba.
Oh, okay.
And
were you just free diving?
Free diving, yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, and keep in mind, you know, the first time he took me out, he took me to a place called Fort Ross, which is in northern Sonoma County on the coast. This was around late 70s. So Jaws was very much in my mind at the time, you know. And at first he wouldn't give me a weight belt. He just let me float on the surface, and he would dive down into the kelp. And we had incredible kelp beds back then. And he would disappear, and he'd come up with two abalone in his hands. So yeah, I was kind of scared the first time, but I soon became pretty comfortable in the cold Northern California waters. So by the time I did get certified, he actually came to my class, my first open water in Northern California. He drove up and watched me. So I have that. And he was telling stories to the instructor about his first experience, which was 45 minutes of instruction on the beach. And then they threw a set of doubles and an aqualung on him and sent him off. You know, that was what happened in his day. So I got certified, and the visibility was about 3 foot, but I enjoyed every minute of it. I mean, I was like, this is great. I can't wait till I get into some clear water, you know. And where I live, the water typically is about 10 foot vis. You can get an exceptional day of 40 foot vis.
Okay.
But generally it's about 10, 15 feet normally, and hovers around 10 to 18 Celsius, which is about 50 to, I don't know what.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Pretty cold.
quick question. So, I'll bring it back a couple questions. Bring it back just a little bit. You were saying, when you were a kid, you didn't like seafood. Do you like seafood now?
I do. Of course, I'm very conscious of, you know, the seafood watch list. You know, you don't want to be eating things that are harmful to the ocean. It's, yeah, you want to be selective. And I've decided, you know, basically there's no abalone hunting up here anymore. For several reasons. But like I said, there used to be incredible kelp beds. When I first started diving and surfing, there were places where you couldn't even surf. There was so much kelp.
Oh, and wow.
A lot of it has gone away. There was a sunflower star die-off, and they eat the urchins. And so there was this urchin explosion. The urchins just decimated the kelp. And part of one of the things I do now is I'm with a group that we dive and collect the urchins. There's two coves on the North Coast where one is where they're collecting and removing urchins, one where they're just smashing and culling them, and as kind of two controls to see if that makes a difference.
Oh, okay. Okay. The reason why I was asking is because it actually, so some of what you said there kind of resonates with me, because I'm originally from California, but we moved to New Hampshire when I was like 12, 13 years old. And just being in New England, close to Maine, lobster is just everywhere. And I remember being a kid, you know, my dad was just so pumped that, like, we're, you know, so close to cheap lobster, because generally it's pretty expensive, and then when you get to that part of the country, it's a lot cheaper because there's just so much of it. And I remember I used to like hate it, like, oh, I don't want to eat any seafood, blah, blah, blah. And then like growing up, I'm like, man, I really miss that opportunity because like I do eat it now. And then just other kind of things too, what you were saying, because my father passed a few years. I think it's actually going to be 6 years this March. And just kind of missing out on certain things. And I've had conversations with people where it's funny because like as a kid, whatever your parents are doing, it's like, no, I don't want to do that. I want to do something else. And then when you kind of get a chance to reflect on those moments, you're like, why didn't I take up that opportunity? So I definitely feel where you're coming from.
Yeah.
And then just another quick question. So what year did you get certified?
It was 95.
Okay.
So 95. And after I was certified, I didn't really dive. I had no buddies. I mean, it's such a remote place. There was a lot of hunters, a lot of free divers, free diving spear fishermen. I didn't meet a lot of, people that wanted to scuba up here, frankly. And so my parents, right before my dad died, he gifted me an advanced open water certification, gift certificate for the local dive shop. And that set of dives was going to take place over a weekend in Monterey. And I went down there and the whole class, everyone that was participating, we shared one room of a hotel in Monterey. We all slept in sleeping bags on the floor. And that is where I met my wife.
Oh.
And she's been my buddy ever since.
That is awesome.
So yeah, we did the advanced open water. We kind of talked and exchanged numbers. Hey, we should be buddies. Because she was actually, it's funny, we went to the same elementary school in the little tiny town up here in Northern California and didn't really realize it until we started talking. But she lived up here and we started diving together. And then that was about 96 that we did the advanced open water. And then we were married in 2000.
That is awesome. Just curious, what was the name of the little town that you went to elementary school in?
Tomales.
Oh, okay. Okay. So yeah, I'm a little familiar with that. Like I said, I have a lot of family in that area. So I'm just kind of like curious of just different towns.
I grew up in Bodega Bay. That's where I spent most of my childhood. Did you ever see Alfred Hitchcock's movie, The Birds?
Yes, but it has been some time since I've seen it, but I know I have seen it.
The town where the birds were attacking Tippi Hedren and all the people, fleeing into phone booths and stuff, that was filmed in Bodega Bay.
Okay.
The restaurant where they were at, where the car exploded and stuff, that was the Tides restaurant. That's where I got my first job as a dishwasher at the Tides restaurant. So when I was a teenager working there, I thought they should make a sequel to The Birds and I can be an extra.
That would have been awesome.
But yeah, Bodega Bay is not really a diving destination, but my wife and I dive there regularly.
Okay, now or in the past?
Yeah, now.
Oh, okay, okay. You got your advanced open water, met your, at the time, future wife. And
yeah.
Once you guys linked up, did you start just diving a bunch?
Yeah, we started diving various spots. We'd take trips down to Monterey. I eventually proposed and we were going to, our plan was to honeymoon in Fiji and do, this grand diving honeymoon, but an opportunity came along to buy a house. So we bought the house and then our plans changed. Let's go to Catalina. So we went a little closer to home for the honeymoon, but it was an incredible honeymoon. We camped at, Two Harbors dove the casino and we rented kayaks and went out to little remote islands outside and dove our brains out.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Just real quick, because I know that Monterey is a diving destination. What is the
Yes.
diving generally like there?
So they thankfully have a lot of still healthy kelp forests. There is some urchin culling operations happening down there. Some organized groups are doing that. But for the most part, it's still a very healthy California, Northern California ecosystem. There's a deep water canyon that comes right into Carmel, just below Monterey, from thousands of feet deep, right up to the beach at this one spot called Monastery Beach. And it's very incredible kelp forest there and lots of life, and sometimes even pelagics come in there. It can be a little dicey on a big swell, so you gotta watch that. But generally, the diving in Monterey is pretty heavenly compared to Bodega Bay.
And that was going to be my next question, is tell me about Bodega Bay. Because obviously there is diving, but it's just not, because I'm from the same thing. Well, in Texas, we have a big lake there. It's kind of a diving destination in Texas, depending on where you're from, because it's such a big lake. But as far as, you know, nobody really wants to get in the water and see a big cat. Well, maybe somebody does, but big catfish or something, you know, occasional just random stuff. But tell me a little bit about the diving in Bodega Bay.
Yeah, so generally we dive a spot. There's a place called Bodega Head, and there's a park that is a sand spit, and then there's a jetty, and the jetty leads into the harbor where all the fishing boats go and stuff. But you can, if you're careful, you can dive the jetty and dive around the jetty, and there's a lot of things hidden in the nooks and crannies, really great for macro photography and, you know, just seeing all the tiny things in there. There, it's not a very deep dive. It maxes out, I think, 25 feet in the jetty area. But there is an island nearby that my dad used to take me out to snorkel around. And I've been trying to get my wife to go out there, but she's a little fearful because there's a big seal colony out there. And Whitey has been seen. The white sharks have been known to be there. So, but I have not seen one. Actually, scratch that. I did see one surfing one time. I did see a fin, and we got out of the water.
Oh, yeah. That's got to be pretty. Because they generally, because I have not seen one. So any knowledge that I have is basically secondhand or you know, reading or watching a program. But they'll actually go after surfers even before divers, correct? Or is that not true?
I was surfing when a guy was attacked. He was bit by a shark. I was just down the beach from where it happened, and we saw him getting pulled out of the water by fellow surfers, and then the emergency vehicles were there, and a helicopter showed up, and we knew, okay, something happened. We got out of the water, and sure enough, this now acquaintance of mine, Eric, he got bit. His Achilles tendon was pretty messed up for a while, but I actually surfed with him this morning. I went out before work, so he's made a good recovery, and he just jumped right back on the saddle.
Oh, that's awesome.
But they are out there. You just have to be aware that it's very rare, but sometimes you draw the lucky straw, I guess, or unlucky straw.
That attack was recently, or was it?
Yeah, that was about 2020, 2021. I think I could look it up, but it was fairly recent. Yeah. Eric Steinle was his name.
Damn. Okay. So let me kind of back it up. You honeymooned in Catalina, bought the house, and then is that kind of when the break happened?
No, we got some good diving in. Let's see, we dove Monterey, and locally north of Bodega Bay, there are some nice coves, kelp beds. We did some exploring up there. We visited a friend in Washington for a wedding. We dove a place in Washington. I can't remember the name. There's a dive park there that was pretty cool. We checked out a local lake where my dad used to do search and rescue, actually. It was pretty green. It was not. And we brought a dive flag, and our buddy on the beach said that jet skiers were just doing donuts around the dive flag. So we heard him up there. So we kind of just came back up the slope to the shore. Some people just don't know better, especially on lakes. Lake Tahoe, high altitude dive. That's kind of neat and unique. Really good visibility in the lake, some cool rock formations, some real steep drop-offs into the abyss.
Where in Lake Tahoe? Cause my girlfriend's father, do you know, Placerville?
Yeah.
Yeah. My girlfriend's father lives in Placerville. So, and I think she was just there over Christmas, and I think she was telling me that there's diving in Lake Tahoe. So I was like, maybe we should go take a trip up there. I'm assuming, is it all year round, or is it generally like a summertime thing?
It depends on the temperature you're looking for. People do dive it year round, but they most certainly have dry suits. The thermocline is the deepest around October, I think, September, October, where you get down to about 50 feet. General, most years, get down to about 50 feet, and you feel that cold water. But in early June, the thermal climb is probably at 10 feet. You know, it'll be, you know, tolerable at the surface and then gets quite cold below that. So I generally dive it late summer.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah, definitely. Sometimes in Texas, the thermocline was really nice to hit because it would be so hot on the surface. And then even like the first 20 or 30 feet, it feels like a warm bath. And I mean, you know, you get a 100-degree day in Texas, and as soon as you hit that thermocline, it's just like, this is amazing.
We got a couple trips into Hawaii too. And then my wife became pregnant. That kind of ended our diving for a while. Didn't really think much about it at the time, but I had a daughter and we raised her, and she's now, she'll be 18 in a couple months. She's kind of self-sufficient now. But yeah, that kind of put a stop on it. We just didn't dive. We were kind of poor at first anyway. You know, it maybe doesn't sound like it. We did a bit of traveling, but you know, my wife had secondhand dive gear, didn't have an octopus. It was kind of bare bones, but we did what we had, you know.
So tell me about getting back into it.
So my wife started working. She's a teacher generally. Her career has mainly been teaching high school and junior high. And then she got a job at the California Academy of Science in, I think it was about 2019. And she comes back from work one day and she says, you know, they have volunteer divers in the aquarium. We should start diving again. You know, we got the requirements to be a volunteer diver there, and you needed, you know, at least 25 dives, which we had, but they were, you know, 15 years ago. And you needed some current dives. So it was like, okay, yeah, I'm on board. Let's start diving again. So we're a little, you know, more financially secure these days. So I just put a bunch of gear on the credit card, and we got our gear together, and we made some mistakes. We didn't do a refresher course or anything, but we were careful about it. We did some dives, but mistakes were made. That's for sure. We did a night dive in Monterey, for example, and we didn't check our BCs properly. The drain plugs were out, and ended up bouncing off the bottom and couldn't figure out what was going on. I finally figured out that we had left our drain plugs out, and I got hers in place, and I couldn't reach mine, and I couldn't communicate that mine needed to be put back in. But we got split up. Another group of divers came through with lights, and my wife and I got confused, and we swam off with different buddies. And so, yeah, it was kind of a fiasco, but it all turned out.
When you got back into it and you were buying the gear, did you have to like reacquaint yourself? Was the gear a lot different, or was it, I mean, I'm assuming it was very similar, but you know, I technology, I would assume, had improved since the last time you've been diving.
Yeah, that slightly. I mean, things had changed for sure. I had never seen integrated weight pockets in a BC before, and that's what we ended up getting. It was kind of jacket style BCs, but we started going down the path of being aquarium divers, and they have the dive safety officer at the aquarium is a UTD diver, and the training we went through, they use all back plates and wings and long hoses. And so we kind of got retrained in our thinking of how people are diving more DIR style.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah, now we both dive with a back plate and wing, and we probably could have saved some money had we not done that initial purchase and done some research first, but you know, it's a learning process.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you take a essentials course?
I have not. I talked to a GUE diver, in Monterey about maybe doing a fundamentals course, and,
okay.
And, the price is a little steep. I was looking at that, and what they taught us at the aquarium is kind of very similar to what GUE does. You know, we did the same swim tests, and we had to do the O2 provider and the first aid and CPR classes. And so I kind of feel like we're, you know, I'm sure there's things we would learn if we took the fundamentals course, but at this point, we're just kind of satisfied with what we've done with the aquarium and what we learned there. So yeah, we volunteer one day a month at the aquarium, and generally you are just kind of a glorified window cleaner and clean the aquarium glass. They do teach you surface supply with a full face mask. And my wife, who has been doing it longer, I just got started volunteering at the aquarium. My wife was doing it for a bit longer, and she does shows in the Philippines Coral Reef Aquarium. So there'll be a presenter dry side with the crowds looking at the aquarium, and they'll talk about the health of the reef and things, and they'll ask my wife questions, and she has a comms and she can talk to the audience, and I've got to dive with her on scuba with her and clean the glass while she's doing her presentation. And it's a lot of fun. The kids really enjoy it. You get to play rock, paper, scissors through the glass and do high fives and things. So it's very fun.
Oh, that's awesome. No, that's really, that is a lot of fun. If I could definitely, well, it seems like you kind of got you got brought up to speed with the UTD instructor, but I definitely would. I just took a fundamentals course this past October, and I definitely really enjoyed it. And the one way, I don't know if I'm sure they do it in the area that you're in, if you do decide to go the fundamentals route, but you can split it up into one and two and then do it over a course of some time. And it's probably going to end up costing you maybe a little bit more, but the fact that you can spread it out makes it a little bit nicer, because that was the route that I was looking at. Like, okay, I'll do the part one, go into it, and then wait a little bit and then do the part two. But also, just, you know, if you have if you were taught the skills anyways, you're probably good, you know? So, and especially if you're doing a lot of fun diving, just keep fun diving would be my suggestion.
I told the guy that I communicated with that, it's probably something I would like to do in the future. Currently I'm, my local dive shop, I decided to go the dive master route and just get some experience there. And if I should ever retire or something, maybe I can use that knowledge to, you know, do something fun in my retirement or something. But so I recently, through that same shop, I took a dry suit class, because I've always been kind of, especially in Monterey, you'll see these Bay Area underwater explorers or GUE divers, and they've got their dry suits and their DPVs and their double tanks, and they just cruise off through the kelp, and you don't see them for, you know, an hour and a half. And yeah, it's kind of something that would be cool. But my wife and I really enjoy kind of the naturalist part of it. And that brings me to another aspect. So the California Academy of Science has an app called iNaturalist. I don't know if you've ever heard of it or not, but it's available on as a website or as an app, and you can basically just take pictures of flora and fauna and, you know, sea or land, and upload it, and people will identify it. You know, they'll say, you know, that's a whatever, and someone say, no, that's this species. You see the other stripe on there, that means this, you know, whatever. But you can basically just keep a life list of things you see. So when we first started diving again, so when we were diving before, I had a clunky Reef Master film camera that I tried using, and you know how film cameras work with only 36 exposures, and so I didn't get the greatest pictures back then, but that was the one thing in technology that changed a lot, was GoPros and digital underwater cameras. So from our very first dive, I brought a GoPro and just kind of documented what I saw, and then grabbed stills from the video I took, and some pictures actually look pretty nice as stills, you know. But just uploading these critters to iNaturalist and people identifying them, and just kind of keeping a life list of things I see underwater, it's kind of neat. And my wife and I both enjoy that. We both do that. It's just a fun project when we go diving together.
I'm writing that down because I am very bad about identification. So, and I have basically a GoPro. It's a DJI action camera. It's same thing. But and yeah. I need to start doing that. We actually just this past last weekend, we bought the the tropical reef book, you know, that you can go through and identify all the fish, just because we're like, we really need to start to up our game in fish identification, coral identity, just any identification underwater. Because it does make the dive a lot nicer when you actually know what you're looking at. It's like, oh, there's a fish, there's a bigger fish, a smaller fish, as opposed to actually knowing what you're looking at.
And the other cool thing about it is you can, if you're going to a new dive site, you know, we took a trip down to Santa Barbara recently, and you can just open up iNaturalist on your laptop and zoom in on the area where you're going, and you'll see a bunch of dots on the map where people have identified things they've seen. And you go to the dots in the ocean and you click on those, and you can see what people have seen underwater. And or if you see like a señorita fish, you can click on the señorita fish and it will bring every sighting on the map, you know, just show it on the map so you can see their range, or lobsters or whatever. It's very cool.
Oh no, that is awesome. I will definitely have to check. And it's an app you could download on your phone or desktop.
Yeah. And when you take a picture on your phone, it geotags it, gives the location. You can obscure that location if you don't want it, you know, exact. And it's really good at identifying things right away. It's got a pretty good AI, I guess, where you can take a picture of something, said, what did you see? It'll give you a list of suggestions, and it usually comes up with the right thing. So it's pretty neat at identifying.
Yeah, no, that is awesome. Well, I wanted to ask you more about your local dive shop, but then also tell me about so are you currently in the Dive Master program, or did you complete the Dive Master program?
I'm doing the online portion now. And when I complete that, I'm going to get all my medical and stuff filled out, and then head into the dive shop and begin that journey.
Awesome. Awesome. How are you finding it so far? All the reading and stuff. The online portion is pretty good.
Yeah, it's been all right. It's been good. Learned a few things. The questions can be a little hinky sometimes, in the quizzes, but yeah.
Well, tell me a little bit about the local dive shop.
Well, we have a couple. There's one north of me and one south of me, about equidistant from the town I'm in Petaluma. And I use them both pretty frequently. The one down south is called Pinnacles, and they have a pool, and that's where I got dry suit certified and did my first dry suit dive in their 90 degree pool or something like that. And then went down to Monterey. But yeah, they're good. It's a good shop. I would recommend them. There was one much farther north that catered more to the abalone diving set and the hunters, and they were there for decades, and they went out of business because the abalone market has basically gone away, or the abalone hunting has gone away. I think that was a big part of their business.
Oh man, that's a bummer. And then my another question I wanted to ask is, so right now it's you and your wife that dive. Is it going to become a family of divers, or does your daughter, is she kind of like, no, I don't want to do the scuba diving thing?
No, you know, we used to drag her to the beach all the time when she was little. You know, my wife and I would surf, and we would get her little wetsuits and, you know, get her on a boogie board. And she wants nothing to do with that now. Kind of like when I was a teenager, I guess, you know, I can see me and her for sure. But she may come around, you know, who knows? She may be diving with us one day if I'm not too old.
Yeah. No, the trick is you got to do like a little tropical warm vacation. And then once they get just a couple snorkels in, and then they're like, wow, let's go a little bit deeper. And then, yeah, because actually I interviewed somebody a few weeks back, and her parents, she ended up getting into it eventually, but her parents owned a dive shop, and kind of the same thing. She was just like, yeah, they wanted me to get into it. It just kind of didn't happen for a little bit. And then when she finally did it, she's like, what have I been missing this whole time?
Yeah.
So hopefully it does come around. And then I actually, a question about the previous training. So I would assume when you first started diving, you were probably just diving off of tables. When you got back into diving, did you incorporate computers? I know the UTD methodology is that I don't want to say they're against computers, but they don't generally, I know their way of thinking. So I'm just curious, do you use a computer now, or is that something that that you got into?
I do. When we got back into diving, we were definitely, studying our tables and doing the tables and things. And it's good to have an understanding of it for sure. You know, if you're a new diver and you're just relying on your computer, I think that, and don't know why it's telling you what it's telling you, I don't think that's a great idea. I think you should really understand what's going on, and kind of learning the tables is definitely a good thing.
Yeah. No, for sure. I go a little bit back and forth because I know the knowledge. I need to brush up on the knowledge, but I know why we're doing what we're doing. But I definitely need to go back and brush up from time to time because I feel like if I get away from it too long, just like anything, you don't use it, you lose it.
Right.
So, and just kind of off the diving subject a little bit, tell me a little bit. You like to surf. You've been surfing for a long time.
Yeah, I've been surfing since I was a teenager. When I first started surfing up here, there was hardly anybody else doing it. There was a few old timers and a couple people my age, but now there's hundreds of people on a given weekend, out in the water. It's certainly a, growing in popularity, and the wetsuits have gotten a lot better. Those early wetsuits were pretty stiff and not that warm, and now they have these supple, flexible, warm, toasty hooded suits, So yeah, it's just something I've always done. It's something that's kept me fit. When I was 18, I took a college class, an art class, and there was a guy there, and he saw a sticker I had, I love surfing or something like that, and he said, I used to surf in San Onofre in Southern California back in the 50s, And he was in his 70s, and I said, do you still surf? And he said, no, I gave that up. And I thought, I'm going to surf until I'm 70. That's my goal, so that's what I'm going to try and do. But I think I can do it. There's a couple guys out there that are in their 70s that still surf. Diving as well.
I actually did a Discover Scuba Dive, or I'm sorry, not a Discover Scuba Dive, a refresher with a lady. I believe she was 83 at the time, and she was just getting back into it. She was about to go on a trip, and she needed some help with the tank and everything, but as soon as she got in the water, it's kind of the nice thing about when you get in the water, it's as long as there's not like a massive current or anything, like you could definitely enjoy some pretty nice easy dives. But when you're diving, are you generally like wearing a 5 mil, or I'm sorry, not diving, surfing, like a 5 mil thicker, anything thicker, or?
Nothing thicker than 5. On a really cold day, I wear a 4 or 5 mil. Generally I have a 3.5, 4.5 mil, which is what I generally wear surfing, but it's been pretty cold lately. So I pull out the 5 mil.
Okay. And then you just got a dry suit.
I didn't. I took a dry suit class, but I was going to say surfing is really a good way to gauge the water conditions for diving, So I'll go out. Sometimes I'll surf before work, get up early and dawn patrol it. And, if you can see the bottom when you're out surfing, it's going to be good diving, So I'll say to my wife, hey, I can see the bottom when I'm surfing at Salmon Creek. We should go check out the dive conditions. But sometimes there'll be a huge swell and good visibility, and that doesn't really work out because most places are really exposed on the North Coast. You can get some pretty treacherous conditions for diving. You kind of have to wait for those lulls, and that's kind of what surfing helps you do. You're constantly looking at the swell and what's coming in and when it's coming, and gives you a good indication of if it's going to be a dive weekend or a surf weekend,
And you said you were surfing this morning. How was it out there today?
Pretty crappy. It was, like I said, we've had all those storms lately. We had 8 inches of rain in a couple storms recently. So the water is brown. We have a Russian River is the river nearby, and it's just flowing brown out into the sea right now. And I'm sure San Francisco Bay to the south and Tamales Bay is very brown. So water quality is not real great at the moment, but that can change. You know, things can settle down and things settle out, and sometimes it can get quite nice after a storm.
Oh, okay. Okay. Do you have any dive trips or dive destinations planned for the future?
Yeah. So we're going back to Catalina in a couple weeks.
Oh, awesome.
To first time scuba diving back there since the honeymoon. So that'll be nice. Hopefully it won't be stormy. There's some storms forecast coming up. Hopefully we'll miss those, but because Southern California got pretty hammered by the last storm. I don't know if you saw any of those news reports, but
I saw places in San Diego were flooding quite bad. I think I saw some social media posts, maybe some news feeds, but I did see that they were getting some heavy rains down there.
But hopefully we'll get good conditions, and then beyond that, we have some friends in Japan, and we've been threatening to visit them for years, and we finally decided let's do it. So we've decided on April of 2025, we're gonna go. They live in near Tokyo and Yokohama, and there's good diving there, cold water diving, which is actually a little bit warmer than where we live, so that'll be nice. And our friend has a second home down near Okinawa, so we'll experience some warm water diving as well.
Awesome!
That is our big trip we have planned, and really looking forward to that.
How long are you planning on going there?
I'm going to say at least 2 weeks, but maybe if we can pull 3 weeks off, that would be wonderful. We'll see. It kind of depends on how much money we save from now until then and how things go. But yeah, I'd love to just spend some good time there.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's I know from San Francisco, they do probably direct to Narita. I don't know if there's another one, but Narita is usually the airport that I'd always do like a transfer through. And I want to say it's like 11 hours, 12 hours maybe. So that is nice. Actually, you got like a direct flight right there, because coming from Texas, it was always I'd always go through San Francisco most of the time, sometimes Los Angeles. But
no,
Japan, that's still a bucket list destination. We almost went last year, but kind of bailed out on the trip at the last minute and then ended up going to Indonesia. But now I was going to say, now you have a friend in the Malaysia area. So anytime you make it down to Malaysia or Southeast Asia in general, definitely look me up, because we're actually planning on being in. So we're going to go visit my girlfriend's father at some point this year. I think she was throwing out August, which you were just telling me Lake Tahoe might be a good time to dive. And so the company that my girlfriend works for is, I want to say it's somewhere, where is it based out of? Somewhere there in the Bay Area. And last time I looked, I was like, oh, there's some dive shops in the area. And so I'll definitely have to maybe hit you up to come and do a dive, because never been diving in California, and definitely something that I would like to do for sure.
Yeah, please do. The year before I got certified, I actually did a trip to Thailand and Malaysia. I remember seeing all these, you know, learn to dive signs everywhere, you know, as I was traveling around, and I was looking at that beautiful clear water, and, you know, and I did a bit of snorkeling there, but that was kind of, I think, the seed that, you know, planted the idea of I should get certified. That trip.
That is awesome. That is awesome. What do you remember where in Malaysia you went to?
I was in, now you're testing me. No, I all I can remember is the big difference in the signage between Thailand and Malaysia. And we were in Koh Samui in Thailand for a while, Bangkok, Koh Samui. And then we took a train. Oh, we took the train down to Koh Samui. And then we flew out of Koh Samui to, what's What's a major airport?
KL? Kuala Lumpur?
Kuala Lumpur, yes. And I remember swimming in the ocean, snorkeling, getting stung by things I couldn't see.
That still happens, but just really
enjoying the clear water.
Yeah, no, it is. My mother is originally from Thailand, so I have been traveling to Thailand since I was a little kid. I actually went to school there for a little bit when I was really, really young. Looking back on that, my dad was just basically like, "Oh, okay, well, let's up and move the family to Bangkok, Thailand." You know, and this is like late 80s, early 80s. And just thinking of like doing that with a family is just such a big endeavor. And I was like, man, that's such a wild concept to think that he was just like, let's go, you know. One of those things I look back on and I really, really appreciate, because it kind of opened my eyes up at a young age to where it's like, okay, this, you know, the Western world isn't just it. Like, I kind of was, you know, definitely got to see a lot more different things growing up. And so I hadn't been back here in a long time, came back on a trip with my mother and just instantly fell in love. I was like 30 and I was like, I'm coming back next year for a month. And then the year after that, it ended up being 2 months. The year after that, it ended up being 3 months. And then I was like, I'm going to make a permanent move out there. And we've been out here 18 months now in Malaysia. Didn't make it back to Thailand. Well, didn't move to Thailand, but Malaysia is just as good in my opinion. So,
yeah.
Well, right on, man. I absolutely appreciate you coming on to the podcast. I want to throw one more question out there for you before I let you go. Kind of an advice question. So someone that got into diving and then they took a extended break, what advice, and they want to get back into it, what is the best piece of advice that you could give to that person who maybe hasn't been diving for 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, and they think that they want to get back into it? What is the best piece of advice you could give to that person?
I would say, before you get your credit card out and buy a bunch of gear, talk to someone who dives the areas where you want to dive, you know, talk to your local dive shops, you know, just get a little information before you kind of get a little credit card happy and start buying shiny new gear. That would be my first piece of advice. But just do some diving, you know, get some experience, you know, take that refresher course if it makes you feel comfortable. If you don't feel confident in the skills that you used 15 years prior and haven't used since. At the aquarium, they frown upon you kicking the coral, you know, or anything in the aquarium, you know, cause it is hard to replace and, you know, it's just bad for them, you know, so they really make you aware of your body positioning and all this kind of stuff. So they really taught us a lot about, being in control of your body and positioning and things like that. And that, I think that's just good advice for diving in general, you know, whether you're in the ocean itself or in an aquarium.
And, you know, it's funny because it's so easy with online shopping these days, just to get that, you start looking, you're like, oh, it looks cool, let me just throw that on the credit card. Yeah, no. So definitely that's probably one of the best pieces of advice, even outside of scuba diving, is don't get credit card happy.
Sure.
Well, awesome, man. I really, really appreciate you coming onto the podcast. It was absolutely wonderful to hear your story. And no, like I said, I'll be in that area at some point before the end of the year. So I'll definitely look you up and I would love to come and get a dive in and just kind of check out the area and have a local guide to kind of show me around. So
please do.
Awesome. Well, I hope you have a wonderful day, man.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thank you. Nice meeting you, Nick.
Off-gassing, a scuba podcast.